All right, members, we'll get going. Hopefully, we can get out of here in short order. Call the meeting of Agro Economies and Vets Affairs Finance to order. And Representative Brown moves the minutes of March 16th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? They're adopted. Reminder, cell phones off, and there is some really heavy-duty, powerful black coffee up there that was been plugged in since 7 this morning. So for those of you that like it black, go help yourself to a cup. We want to get rid of it. It's the last hour of that stuff, but it's good. We're drinking it here, but we're going to be awake till midnight. So everyone help yourself to coffee. Members, what we're going to do today is take up House File 2678, and then we're going to, in your packets, you have a delete all amendment. Again, as you know, we've asked everyone on this committee or even in our caucuses, if you have anything for ag or veterans that you want to get done this year, to bring it to us, and that still holds. What we're going to do is go through the bill today. If anyone's got questions or anyone in the audience needs to testify or get something squared away, we'll certainly welcome that. And then tomorrow we'll come back. If you have anything you need, see Representative Magnus or myself, and we'll get working with our staff. If the committee agrees with it tomorrow, we'll put it in the bill if it's something that needs to be done. We're not picky here. We just want to make sure people get the stuff done they need to get done. So we will go through the bill now quickly, and then I'll explain it to the best of my ability along with staff here when I need them, and so you can mark yours up too, and then we'll take questions or comments or testimony briefly after that. And I know we both have caucus at 11:30, so hopefully we're out well before that. So again, first of all, I'll move House File 2678, and then I'll move the DE1 amendment. Okay, that's to get the bill in order. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the bill's in the order we need it. Now we'll go through it. As you look at the bill, the first section there, all of page 1 and down to 2.27 on the next page is the Olin Wolf bill we heard in here. Starting at 2.28 to 3.16, and again, this is a piece of a bill that actually Representative Hortman is carrying. We saw it over in the Environment Committee and Representative Eakin's committee, and it was to provide a goal of issuing permits from our departments within 150 days. It's actually a Chamber of Commerce bill, and the environmental community kind of teamed up on it, and they thought that goal was good. And rather than wait around for that bill, there was a section in there for agriculture, which certainly is under our purview to instruct our commissioner. If people are coming to the Department of Ag, we would hope they could get those permits turned in 150 days. They do turn livestock permits within 60 days. So I think we do a good job over there, and certainly if there's some questions on that from the department, we'll work with them between now and tomorrow, but I would think that would meet their approval too. It's just a piece of that Hortman bill brought over here that's the ag portion of it. So you see that in here. I don't know what's going to go on with the rest of the bill over across the way, but we'll deal with our part here. 317 through 5.3, through 5.31. It was a department bill that Representative Faust carried. It includes the pesticide fee changes, and the bovine TB stuff is in there. And, you know, mainly it's the fee changes asked for the department. 5.32 to through what?
All on the first page.
Okay, right on the bottom of page 5. Bunn had a bill on 4-H. And out as you know, in her county, out on that side of the metro area, they're talking about dropping their 4-H programs. And so they asked for some language that in that county where the program is going to be dropped, if they could charge fees or other things to keep the program going. And that certainly has the support of a number of our farm groups, as well as the county fair folks and others that are in this room today. So we put that piece in here to move that ahead, and hopefully that meets with everyone's approval. The next page, 6-1, is a FAUST bill again. It's a department bill on repackaged foods. Again, remember, if you are selling just prepackaged or repackaged foods, you fall under some different guidelines than those that are preparing it on site, and that addresses that. Starting on section 14 on 7.9 and going through section 17 on page 9, what you have is a number of issues and items we've put in there to address our ethanol. And we talked about them in committee, but just to refresh you, a number of things. If first of all, it says Minnesota's ready to go to E15 if the federal government gives us a waiver for it. However, based on our gas station folks and others, we have a problem, I think, if it's a partial waiver, if it's only for year 2001 cars or newer. So what this language says is a number of things. Number one, we only go to E15 if it's a full waiver, so if all cars can use it. So we don't have to put in extra tanks or pumps or anything. We're not trying to do that burden to our retail gas people. It's only if it's a full waiver. So we'll watch DC. That's the first thing it says. Secondly, it gives the Department of Commerce the ability through their weights and measures to specify if we go to E15 in August, and we're not here in session, we know that folks at Flint Hills or Magellan Terminals or other places, they have to calibrate their equipment, set up their invoicing, you know, get all the stuff in place to dispense E15. That might take them 10 days, might take them 30 days, might take them 40 days. We don't know, but we don't want them to be out of compliance the day E15 would hit. So Department of Commerce will determine how long it takes them to get their equipment set up since they're familiar with it and work with them, and then they can proceed after that. There's also some liability language in there. You'll see in section 17, which also meets some of our retail stations. It's similar to the liability language we've had with other biofuels, just to say they're not liable for that fuel and they're not liable if someone burns the wrong fuel, et cetera, et cetera. I know that they're working on probably a little more language that may come tomorrow in a little technical amendment to that, but they'll be working with Mr. Sullivan and others on that. And then we've got some vapor pressure language, again, that Flint Hills and Magellan have talked to me about, the way they calibrate their lines. They have different materials going through there, and vapor pressure is a big deal. And we're working and continue to work with Mr. Sullivan on that language to make sure that we're in compliance. Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a technical note. As you indicated, sections 14 through 17 all work together on the mandate language, and the EPA may, in fact, act during this interim on the waivers. So sections 14 and 15 have immediate effective dates, but also I'd like to add section 16 and 17, so that'll be in tomorrow when we do a technical.
So they'll all be effective, you know, at the same time. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You mentioned if the EPA grants a partial waiver, did you just say that our gas stations couldn't go to a higher blend if they would so choose?
Well, I guess we could, Mr. Sullivan, I suppose we could develop a plan. Does this allow them to do it if they want to? But they don't have to. It's not mandated. That's correct. He's shaking his head yes. So if you do have the pumps available, and that's a selling point to, say, a Senex co-op out there, or those that do it, if they want to put in the E15, what they're talking about federally, and frankly, for the most part, is a poison pill, let's be honest. If they label that E15 is for 2001 or newer vehicles only, I predict not a lot of E15 will be sold, because you will have to have pumps for E15 and E10. And label them for the cars that they are used for. And I think that's bizarre that they would even do that in D.C. And again, I've talked to Senator Klobuchar's office. That was news to her 2 weeks ago. And I personally talked to Colin Peterson's office and told him to work with Vilsack and Obama administration and say, you know, tell them that, you know, for good or bad, if they put that partial waiver in and not a full waiver for all vehicles like we have with E10, I think it's just a poison pill for E15. So I think people need to be aware of that, but we're going to be ready either way. And our stations can certainly dispense both if they want to, and if that's a good market for them, they'll probably do it. So, but it's up to them, and we're not telling them to do that. We have the next section, electronic access liability retention. We've got in here some ag lien law language, which we all heard. For our livestock producers, I'm going to ask the Secretary of State's office come forward. They're in the audience here, Mr. Black, and basically they came to me and said, you got about the only bill, you know, the last train leaving the station that we could do anything for Secretary of State stuff. I told them to go talk to Representative Mulry's committee as they oversee that, show them the language. If he's okay with it, we'll certainly be happy to move it forward. It's some technical language, which you're going to hear, but it's a lot of pages. I just want to point that out. It goes all the way through 1312 to make a couple corrections. So even though the bill looks long, a lot of it isn't real lengthy here. But we're happy to put it in, and if you could talk about it a little bit, introduce yourself for the tape, and kind of let the committee know, just so we know what's in there, so we can tell our folks that ask why this is in there and what it does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the legal advisor for the Office of the Secretary of State, and what you have before you on pages 9 through 13 is an attempt to deal with the fact that we are moving in the Secretary of State's office to many more online functions, and so, for example, in these sections deal with the problem of Social Security number data, and Social Security number data is classified in Chapter 13 as private, with exceptions, and these are the exceptions that we have, and there are some other exceptions with respect to land records that I won't get into and that aren't involved here. The Social Security numbers for central notification system effective financing statements, farm liens, have always been available by federal law, 7 U.S.C. 1631, the 1985 Farm Bill. That law has been changed in recent years to allow for an alternative unique identifier, which is something that the state of Colorado has fully implemented now as they go to online. The problem that we're facing is that the CNS function has been one where we've had a closed universe until now. We have the grain buyers and the other agricultural buyers who register with us to get these lists, and they're the only ones who get these lists. Now that we're going online, we're not going to have that human intervention to be able to figure out who is actually getting these lists before they put in their credit card number and download the list. And so this data needs to no longer be available. The data is used to make sure that at the point of sale and purchase that the buyers, the agricultural buyers, are identifying the right person so that they can write the check to both the seller and to the lender, which we've had in this state for 15 or almost 20 years. And with respect to the Uniform Commercial Code section in the front, same thing, except, as you may know, we have agricultural liens filed under the Uniform Commercial Code under Chapter 514. So really, this is an effort to make sure that Social Security numbers are just not floating out there as we get more access in a 24/7 kind of service. We're glad to provide the service online, but we need to take this precaution.
So basically, people that can get lists from you and other things now, particularly with ag liens and ag transactions is what you're referring to here, it may be identified by a farm number or some other thing, but it will not have that Social Security number. So the person using the list could certainly identify who they are through some other number system or filing numbers or other things, but they will not be... You're worried because you may be required, if we don't do this change, to give out Social Security numbers along with the other data.
If somebody, Mr. Chairman and members, if somebody asked us for a copy right now, we would have to give out that data, and it would include that data.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, has this bill or this language, has it been heard in any other committee, and was there any testimony for or against this language?
And Mr. I'll answer that. He must just walked in, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This was brought to us by Secretary of State because, again, it deals with farm aglings and other things, and we're kind of the last vehicle moving out of this place, and I sent them down first to represent Mulry's committee to talk to him and his CA, and they looked it over and said, no, it's fine. It's a technical cleanup, and it's actually a protection for our farmers and other ag suppliers and other folks on this, and they said it's fine to put it in here. So this is the first we've seen it, but certainly that's why we're laying the bill out today. And if there's any problems with it or corrections that people see, we're certainly welcome. And we have a lot of the ag groups in here and others, and bankers, I believe, are sitting over here. So if they see anything amiss with this, we'll certainly hear about it, or we'll make some changes between here and tomorrow, working with Secretary of State and our staff. So.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Moving on. Thank you, Mr. Black.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Going down Section 22 again, I suppose may get some discussion along the way. I'm, again, happy to put it in. This was something that was brought to our attention by the department. This is a issue that Representative Brown and Poppy worked on a couple years ago, and it has to deal with foreign-owned wind farms. Again, we have a couple items in here that maybe talk about our corporate and foreign-owned laws in this state. Right now, there's a number of wind farms up, particularly down in Representative Brown and Poppy's area, and you can correct me if I say anything wrong, Representative Brown, but so these farms have been here. Perhaps a European company or others built them originally or are connected somehow. Now when they go to get access through them, through, what am I saying now? Easements. Easements are a bundle of rights, a bundle of property rights that are attached to the land, usually in perpetuity once you get the easement. And our Department of Agriculture and others are interpreting that as then that easement is owned by a foreign corporation. So now these farmers and other wind owners that have these in place have got a problem in that they can't legally grant access to them for servicing or anything else if there's ties to the foreign ownership of these because of our corporate farm laws. So the department is saying, you know, to enforce these, we would have to not allow that access and essentially turn these windmills off. And I don't think that's anyone's intent. But we had a debate on it on the floor a couple years ago. Again, we think it's important enough, and we've worked with some of our farm groups on this, by the way, in particular Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, and others who have looked at this. And we're concerned because it's income that go to our farmers. And so working with them and others, you may see a little caressing of this language tomorrow in a technical amendment. We're still working on comfort language for that for everyone involved. But again, as it moves forward, I'm sure that will be one of those magnets in this bill that may get some discussion since it was a couple years ago. Representative Brown, is there anything else we need to know about that?
No, I think you covered it real well. Thank you.
And it's still important to you and Representative Poppy and others down there?
I think it's important to anybody that has windmills in their districts.
Okay.
That's for sure.
So again, that's where we're at on it, and we're doing it for some members who have brought it to our attention. Section 24.
Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Welty. Is it important to you to represent Welty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I won't get into it, but I'm just wondering if there's someone from the Department of Agriculture who could come down right now and tell us at the department why this is an issue and why they're bringing it forward, because I know we heard about it earlier this session, and I have yet to hear from the department really the reasons. So I'm just wondering if someone can address this from the department.
Can you address that from the department? Here he comes.
Yeah.
We got attorneys galore in the room here today, too. So, and maybe while you're up there, I think there's two issues in the bill. And the next one is our corporate farm issue. And I guess what Representative Welty needs affirmed, and I guess I do too, in the committee is, your enforcement abilities or non-abilities with this. What role do you play in all this through the Department of Agriculture?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Doug Spanier. I'm an attorney at the Department of Agriculture. With the alien farm law, Minnesota Statute 500.221, basically what it says is it doesn't allow foreign companies to have more than 20%, actually what it is, companies with more than 20% foreign ownership are not allowed to have any type of interest in agricultural land. So what's happened is, technically, where the windmill goes is not agricultural land because the windmill's there. The roads are not ag land. It's this, the transmission lines or the installation, that's an easement. It's underground and it's still farmed. So that area right there is the only area that's a technical violation of the alien farm law. Plus, as I understand it, and I'm not a wind expert at all, but they also need to get wind rights over the area to prohibit farmers from, you know, putting up large buildings in the way of the windmills. So that would actually also be a violation. So we've gotten numerous phone calls from companies saying, you know, from wind energy companies saying, hey, what can we do? And we keep telling them, you can't do it. Just, you know, tell them what the law says, and it's been causing issues. So this would be a way to take care of it. Plus, the other issue we have is, I don't know when there's a private transaction between a producer and a wind energy company, because it's a private transaction. There's a lease agreement there. It's difficult for me to do any type of enforcement mechanism on it because I don't know about it. It's a private transaction. This way, if they do it under this law, under the new provisions, they would need to report to us. So then I would know what's going out there. We'd have an idea.
And the Department of Agriculture is the enforcing body for corporate and foreign ownership of farmland. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Chair.
So that's why it shows up here. It's under our section of law in all those items because they're the enforcers of it. Any other questions to that while we have him at the table? Representative Hamilton.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How would this be any different than owning of dairy cows or hogs or anything like that?
Mr. Spanier.
Mr. Chair, committee members, it wouldn't. I mean, foreign entities aren't allowed to do any of that. Well, I shouldn't say it. Under the foreign, it's an interest in the land. So, you know, there's the corporate farm law, which the next section, which is 500.24, that deals with corporations engaging in farming or have an interest in ag land, whereas the alien farm law only deals with an interest in the land. So no foreign individual or an entity that has more than 20% foreign ownership can have any type of interest at all in ag land.
Okay. Thank you. Which again, the next section of the bill through page 23, and the language you want to look at is actually on page 22. Again, this is what makes the bill longer than it seems. It takes like five or six pages because we're changing a section here. Again, this was brought by Representative Karen Clark to our attention through the Department of Agriculture. Right now, as you know, nonprofit corporations in Minnesota cannot own and farm ag land. We've got a bunch of these CSAs, these community garden and farm units in the state, including one that one of our members belongs to up by North Branch or somewhere north of the cities. And that's fine, but again, according to our law, the way they're organized as a nonprofit, they could own the land and rent it out to someone to farm, but they can't own the land and farm it. So what we're doing here is trying to correct that in a limited way and say that they can farm it up to limited acreages, but it has to be, the ag land, any profit has to be used for educational purposes. So again, they're not profiting from it. Say a church would own the land and want to farm it. They can't bring it back into their congregation and do things. They have to actually use it for educational purposes. I don't know what the definition of that is, but maybe we'll talk about that going forward. But we're trying in a very limited way to do it. The Senate, I will tell you, approaches this in a different manner. I think they're going to make some corrections too, but they're going to do a grandfathering in of what's there now, and then going forward, you can't have it again. I don't know what the best is. We're going to do this. We'll match up in conference committee and talk about it. And one way or another, we'll correct that problem, I hope, for these folks. And again, if we don't, the Department of Agriculture is the one that is authorized to make sure people adhere to the corporate farm law. And they literally would have to go into these CSAs and say, you need to cease and desist. You're not structured right to be farming. And that's not our intent, I don't think. And so we're going to continue to work through it with our attorneys and others. And we'll put it in there for now in a limited way. The lien law we talked about starts in Section 25 on page 23. You're all familiar with that. We talked about, again, to give a very limited lien for 30 days after mediation request has been filed, and that was aired in here, and I think everyone's on board with that language. Page 24, again, through page, this is why the bill's long,
39.
Through page 39. Basically, the department has asked us, and we agree to, we have some grants out there for our fertilizer grants and next-gen energy grants and others. If we don't make these changes, those grants would sunset, and those folks that are in line to get them would not get them. So we're just extending them out until June 30th, 2011, till the end of our fiscal year, and allowing them to use the money that's already there that they're working on getting out the door. We've had some slowdowns in some of these projects because of the economy, and so as they ramp back up to get some of these projects going, we want to make sure the money that they've already been promised is available for them. So again, it takes a lot of sections, but all we're changing is some dates in there. Section 32, Representative Magnus will tell us about that section since it's his bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, those in the ag community will know this, that we've had a perfect storm hit the last few years, especially this last year, where we had an unusual amount in many areas for the first time in history, requirement to dry soybeans as they were so wet. Cold year, wet year, delayed maturity in the corn, and that caused another part of the perfect storm that hit, where we had all this wet corn come in. The harvest weather in October was not fit for harvesting. That caused us to shorten the harvest season also. And so what happened was we've had to go to the governor for the third or fourth year in a row now and ask the governor to grant a waiver for the in-service hours for trucks, because as these trucks sit in line at the terminals for especially propane and in some cases anhydrous ammonia, they count as in-service hours the time they spend in line. And so if the capacity, for example, at one of these terminals is maybe two trucks an hour, and there's 40 trucks in line, you can see the problem we get. It's compounded as companies then search for bringing other truckers from Nebraska, Oklahoma, Kansas, all over the Midwest to bring in to get extra trucks going, just adds to the length of time in line. Basically, what we have here is, and the governor has been, you know, doing these waivers, but, you know, you just can't be doing waivers to federal laws indefinitely. And it looks like we have a 1940s infrastructure to handle a 21st century industry. And so we're looking at doing a study of the terminal and pipeline capacity in the state of Minnesota and within 100 miles of the borders. This also is not just an agricultural problem, because much of rural Minnesota, the small towns and folks living in acreages use propane, of course, for heat, for heating fuel. And so the problem comes in that when you get all these transportation costs added on, for example, these folks have to go, if the terminal and pipeline infrastructure is blocked up here in the state because of the backup with this, then they've got to go to western South Dakota, Kansas, Nebraska, eastern Wisconsin, and points farther. And this raises the transportation costs, Mr. Chairman, for propane and anhydrous. And in the case of last year, I started buying propane for drying fuel at $1.17 a gallon, and finally bought what I thought I would need the rest of it at $1.55, you know, about a 40% increase in the cost, and went up from there. But the bigger problem came in then that we, in a lot of areas, had to shut down the drying systems and the propane folks. And I hate to see us shut those down, and I certainly can't have us not have propane available for people, folks living in small towns and in the rural areas. So, Mr. Chairman, I've asked that we include this study in here, and we'll likely have some folks come in and talk about it as we move on, but it's an important situation I think we need to look at.
Okay, moving on quickly, Section 33, again, working with our dairy producers in particular, but I think you've heard, and you've heard during dairy days when they were here and others, they're very interested in a dairy research facility, similar to what we saw in Northeast Iowa. Some of us took a trip down there a couple years ago. With the increased interest in dairy, the increased production, other things, and the interest in dairy classes and research and other things in the state, we're just going to have them sit down. Give them some direction that they should meet with our University of Minnesota, MinSCU, and Department of Ag. Have the Commissioner of Ag just convene at one or more meetings. This isn't a big cost, but to get those discussions going, so hopefully next year we can start planning for the next year in bonding to perhaps develop a dairy research and education facility. So this language just simply is a starting point for maybe a project that will occur, we hope, in the next couple of years. But it's good, I think, to get it in there and show that we as a legislative body are also interested in that. The Section 34, we want to, let's see, I don't know where that came from. Mr. Sullivan. Oh, this is for, what we're asking the commissioner to do is to go out and look for money. Again, Representative Hilty and Representative Senator Anderson and their committee, for one reason or another, obviously the economy, as we try and fix budgets, they're doing it too, and we don't have a lot of money left in our pump accounts for putting in E85 or blender pumps across the state, which we know are important to our retailers. We're asking the department to actively pursue federal and other grants, whether they're energy stimulus grants or just to keep looking every single day they can and see if there's some monies available that we might be able to bring in and refill those accounts over at the Minnesota Lung Association, who administers these grants. It's very important to us. I would hope they're doing it anyway, but we want to make sure they are and that we remind them of it, so we're sticking that in there. Tell them, keep looking for money. It's so important right now. Chairman. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that point, the funding for the E85 and the biofuel pumps was in the Department of Commerce, and that got zeroed out in the budget bill that was passed yesterday. So it is important, Mr. Chairman, you and I have talked about this several times, that we look at ways we can access other funds and to help backfill some of those funds we lost.
You bet. So we're going to continue moving forward. There's a repealer in Section 35, came from the department. It repeals a wildflower seed loan program that's never been used. So I don't know when it got put into law, but it's never, ever, ever been used, and maybe we can use that money elsewhere. Article 2 that moves into the veterans section. Newton had a bill on Minnesota flag folding and display, went through committee. We're going to put that in here. We think it's important. We know how to not only fold our U.S. flags, but our Minnesota flag, and it's kind of a neat little bill. Section 3 on page 41, Representative Hosh will continue to work on this language. Last year, if you remember, we passed what we thought was a bill, and our intent was to pass a bill that would give teachers a preference for interview only for a job, not that they would become part of a teacher's preference or a veteran's preference for scoring or a veteran's preference for dismissal or any of the other activities that a lot of, like, our state and other agencies have to go through, but for interview only. So get the veteran in the door to get an interview and give them a preference on that. Unfortunately, the way our language is put together kind of added that person to that whole veteran's preference system. And, you know, not that we're necessarily for or against that, but that was not the intent of this law. We've had our school boards and teachers, unions, and others come to us and say, boy, that's pretty complicated for a school district anywhere in the state to put that system in place now and start dealing with it. I know, Representative Hosh, you can discuss it briefly if you want. I don't think that was your intent with the bill last year, and you're working on language yet, aren't you?
Mr. Chair, it was... The language was intended to be at the front end of the process, you know, at the initial application, getting the interview and hiring, not for terms of dismissal and the preferences involved with veterans' preference on that end. And the School Boards Association brought their concerns to me. I'm working with them and Mr. Cleary to get some language together that still meets the original intention and doesn't give undue burden to our school boards.
So we may see an amendment on that to keep working on that tomorrow while Mr. Cleary and others will take care of that. 3508 was a Department of Veterans Affairs technical bill, again, to provide some information they need on various pieces as far as veterans' preference hearings go and notices and other things that that they need. We heard that bill and was a pass through committee. County Veteran Service Officers met, as you know, on page 43, section 7. Down to 45, section 12 is that CVSO bill with corrections and changes to the statutes based on the last 2 years of a subgroup meeting with the department, legislators, and folks out in the veterans community, our service organizations, and other and counties, by the way. So this is language that's been approved by all those people, and hopefully it'll be good. Veterans Cemetery money. We may want to change this before tomorrow to Mr. Cleary and Mr. Reinholtz, perhaps. We are again, want to make sure in southeast Minnesota and southwest Minnesota that we're identifying and moving ahead, hopefully, with veterans' cemeteries. We had a nice hearing on that, including using Fort Ridgely, which is in here, as language. The problem is, the persnickety Senate, and we don't want it to be the persnickety House. Senator Langseth says, well, you're changing a section of law here that was in a bonding bill. And so if you put that in this section with that money, then I want to see it over in my committee, is what Langseth is saying in the Senate. We don't want to run into that problem in the House, so I'm going to ask staff to rewrite that somehow. We don't need the money. This is, you know, the money's already there, and it's available in the account. And but working with Department of Veterans Affairs and others, we don't want this bill to get caught up in a bonding fight on anything. So maybe it's not a problem here. We can certainly check if it's not a problem with our committees. But in the Senate, it's become an issue. So I'm going to ask you to review that by tomorrow and see if you can't make sure our language is okay on that. And then part of the CVSO bill also shows up. That's part of what we saw earlier is also in section 15, and then we have an effective date at the end. So that's our bill, and again, I want to state if there's anything you're hearing about from any of our colleagues or any of you that should be in here, this is probably one of the last vehicles out of this place before Easter break, and we're not going to do a lot of work in committee after that. So again, see Representative Magnus or Hamilton or Otremba or myself, and bring it to our attention, work with staff and the departments if need be, and we're happy to put it in if the committee agrees with it. This is your bill coming out of here. It's not my bill. It's our committee bill. And so whatever you want, we want to make sure we're addressing it and get it taken care of before we go home. Any questions from committee members at this point? Anyone in the audience? Oh, wait a minute. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Going back to page 2, the new language on lines 2.30 to 2.33. Are there any teeth to that, or is this just a recommendation? Some of the permits you mentioned automatically within 60 days, they are approved if not acted upon. Does this have anything like that with it?
It is a goal. So this language right now, it's a goal. It's not a requirement that they must do. That's what we hopefully can move to in the next year, once we see if they can meet these goals. I think Department of Agriculture can. I think they're good. I'm looking at them over here. They're shaking their heads. They're good people over there. What we do is so minimal in some of these permitting processes. You know, we do mainly feedlots and some of that stuff we're involved with. But you know, some of this stuff is minimal, and I think they can get it done. If we see it not as a problem, we'll make it a requirement that they're done within 150 days, at least from our end, and hopefully PCA and DNR can follow suit. We'll set an example. But right now it's a goal only, so there's, you know, it doesn't have any teeth, but I think it sends a strong message that this legislature thinks we ought to get our permitting done in a timely basis and get people answers out there that are waiting to construct, whether it's an ethanol plant or a feedlot or a sewer and water system. They ought to be able to get their permits out there. Any other discussion to the bill? Anyone in the audience want to add anything at this point? Mr. Bond. James Bond. No.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brief comment. I want to underscore the importance of Section 32, the Terminal Capacity Report.
Okay.
The Minnesota crop production retailers are those folks in our state who supply the producers their crop inputs. And this issue has been before us for a number of years. In fact, our association, at the direction of my board of directors, asked that we pull together a look at this, and we cooperated with the Department of Agriculture. The commissioner worked very closely with us and his staff. We brought together folks from the terminals, those that own terminals, the trucking systems that supply anhydrous and propane, and then the dealers and a few farmers joined us as well, farmers organization groups. We were trying to address the capacity within the system to get better and be more efficient and effective. It's clear to me that this is a bigger problem than the industry can do supply on its own. And one of the issues that comes when industry starts coming together to talk about this is antitrust considerations. And there were folks that couldn't attend meetings because of those, which is why it needs to be a public policy discussion. Realizing that this may take some resources, you may be faced with a fiscal note, I don't know. But I would encourage you to pursue this as they are in the Senate as well. We think this is a very critical issue. Thank you.
Thank you. And I know Representative Magnus is working with some different pots of money that if we have to address that, hopefully we can. Representative Faust has a question before you leave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my point is really not a question. It's really just to support that. About 15 years ago, I was president of what I believe was the largest retail propane company in the state. And in 1992, there was a cold spell that lasted about 40 days. We were about 40 days in a row, it was below zero. We were within one day. If it had lasted one more day, there would have not been a gallon of propane in the state. We were that close. And Representative Magnus commented that we've got a 1940s system. We actually have worse than a 1940s system. Because in 1940, a lot of the propane was delivered to the towns by rail car. And those terminals have been taken out since then. And now we're relying on just trucks. And so we actually have a system that is much worse than what we had in 1940 because that whole part of the distribution system has, for the most part, disappeared. And we haven't replaced those adequately with other systems. And so it's a very important report. And so I support that very strongly.
We'll try and figure it out. Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, one more comment. You have tried to address the troubling hours of service issue related to these products. A solution that would provide more terminal capacity directly addresses that other issue.
Because it would be short hauls. We wouldn't be going to other states to pick up. And
right.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Mr. Peterson. Introduce yourself for the tape and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I just wanted to briefly address the foreign corporation and wind easement. There's a piece that's not in there and wasn't discussed by the committee when you were talking about it. I think, Farmers Union, we've always been concerned about the foreign ownership and wind easements. But in working with all the parties and the department and, I think we've come to realize, and look at some of the realities of the situation. However, and I was told that it might be in the bill tomorrow, the Senate added a provision of a 7-year easement extension for 1 year. Currently, if you approve this bill, we're going to have easements. We will have more companies coming in to buy, land and easements in all of your districts. But right now there's a provision in the law that says you can buy it for 7 years until the turbine's turning or it's active, and that's what all the companies have been going by and following. That sunsets this year. We had a 2-year extension on it 2 years ago. That sunsets this year. So now when people are going out to your districts and buying easements, they're going to be buying, of course, trying to buy much longer easements. And companies, depends on the company. Some of the companies, they're competitive. But other companies, I've been up in northwest Minnesota, and they've told people, hold on till June or July, and we'll be looking at your easements then. And the reason's simple. We can sign a 25, 50, or whatever your perpetual easement, and then they hold that land and for development. And it's my understanding that if we're going to go forward with this, that having that 7 years, what the Senate did and what we worked on was a one-year extension of that 7 years. And then, you know, there might be some issues with 7 years. We've had it for a couple of years. It's been working, I think, reasonably well. I think a lot of the companies are used to that 7 years. We can come back next year in the Energy Committee, Ag Committee, and look at South Dakota's going to 12 years, North Dakota's at 5 years, and see. But I think that's a reasonable protection for landowners if we're going to clarify and open up those changes.
So what your intent is, and our intent, frankly, too, is to match that Senate language that we've developed. That'll get us the extension so no one's out of compliance at this time, and then over the interim and into next year, like you say, see what our surrounding states are doing and address it, hopefully in a more uniform way, but correct the problem if we can.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Falk had a bill we just were kind of working on with different people this year and got it kind of late and everything, and so there is, you know, we've been working on addressing it. It's just didn't quite get it done.
Okay.
So appreciate your consideration. Just wanted to bring it up.
And I think we want to do that. Again, working with Representative Brown and Poppy and Falk and others now, you know, let's do what we can this year so that we're not stuck with sunsets and other things, and hopefully next year you can keep working, and others over the interim with Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, and others it's their producers that have this land, and so certainly they're concerned from that aspect to make sure that they can still utilize those turbines that are out on their property. So, all right, very good. And again, we'll work on that language with the department too, and with our Mr. Sullivan to maybe fill that in tomorrow. Any other comments from anyone else on the bill today? And again, our point is then tomorrow we'll come back, we'll do all these amendments or corrections or technical changes, and we'll move the bill out of committee tomorrow as a committee bill. So with that, we're adjourned.